In this technology era, information is key. Are you vulnerable to having your identity stolen? How about having a house bought in your name? Where are you vulnerable, and what can you do to protect yourself? We'll find out on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yeah, as always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting Daddy started today. Mwah. Welcome to Frank Relationships, where we provide a candid, fresh, and frank look into relationships with goals of acceptance, respect, and flexibility. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. You can also find me on ABC's Good Morning Washington most Friday mornings during the 9 o'clock hour. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and then via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get each show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We're always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super-duper co-host, Nancy Goldring.
Hi, Frank.
The consummate generalist.
Yes.
How have you been?
I'm great, thank you.
Great, great.
I am great.
Today's guest is a published author of books and a blogger that focuses on security and privacy issues. He's written articles that have appeared in daily and weekly publications, and throughout the year, he can be found attending any security conference that he can pull the resources together to attend. So, if you, like me, want to know if privacy is even possible, what a declaration of privacy is, and how you can protect your good name, then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with privacy expert Trip Elix. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for the introduction, Frank.
You are very welcome. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Great. Before we get too deep into the interview, I'm going to check in with Nancy to see anything in the news, Nancy.
Well,
any interesting stuff to talk about?
Well, Trip, in the interest of this being an interview about technology and privacy, I found myself curious about the whole dating and technology phenomenon and this whole idea of checking up on a person before you get too involved with them. And my own question became, when is it due diligence and when is it spying?
So you figure you're just going to hijack the show and just...
No!
You're just going to make...
No!
You're going to start the interview really about him.
I'm not starting the interview about Trip. I'm just saying Trip is a great way to weigh in on a subject that is like out there.
Okay.
That's all.
All right.
Okay, Trip, let me roll it back. Let's talk about something else.
Let's keep on going. I just find it interesting how you've
I want Trip to feel
over.
Welcome.
Okay.
You see?
Okay, Trip, what you got?
Well, you know, I believe in it. Let's back up just a little bit. My background also includes credit investigation.
Oh. Mm.
And that's really what got me into understanding what companies sold what is because I used to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Before there was an internet, I was known as a skip tracer. And that means I looked for and found people that were hiding that owed money, usually to banks.
And how'd you do that?
How did I do that? I did that through a wide variety of systems that were already selling data about people by subscription only.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is the internet came along, and just when you have, anytime you have a lot of competitors in a marketplace, the price drops dramatically. So to do a lookup or a dossier 20 years ago, I mean, you know, you'd be talking about $50 to do that. Mm-hmm. Today, it's less than a dollar.
Right.
And where what were some of the companies you used 50 years ago? I mean, whatever. Did you say 50 years ago? How many years ago?
20
years ago.
Actually, you know, before 93, the credit system has changed also, and the laws regarding what can be disclosed. But the credit companies, TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian, used to directly sell the information from your credit report to anybody that Congress wrote a law about that disclosure and shut that part of the banking industry down from selling personal information.
Mm-hmm.
Other companies have been around for a really long time, but getting back to the dating stuff and, you know, looking up who somebody is,
right,
a lot of the information about us that is on the internet, most of it, well, let's talk about the myth first.
Yes,
because
let's address
two sides of this.
Okay.
There's a thing out there called public information.
Mm-hmm.
That's a myth. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as public information.
What
the only public information about you, Frank, is the address at your home or your business.
Mm-hmm.
Not your name and that address, just the address. That is public information. Your name has never been public.
Mm.
My name associated with that address should not be public information.
Actually, your name is not public.
Period.
What happened to us was that all of us were being extorted for many years, since the 1920s, by being published in the phone book.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by extorted is anytime the company says that they will do something unless you pay them, that's extortion. And that's exactly what the racket the phone company had.
Mm-hmm.
When I was that PI, I used to buy, I didn't buy, but my company bought what was called the Unlisted Directory. And that was a book that looked just like the phone book from the phone company, but all the numbers in it were unlisted.
So you bought the unlisted phone numbers, even though people paid the phone company to not list
it.
Not listed in their regular book. They didn't say that they wouldn't list it in any book. They just said that they wouldn't list it in the public book.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
All right. Now, why would you buy these numbers? What would people come to you?
Well, I bought them because I was looking for people that were hiding.
Right.
But, you know, there are websites that are out there that are owned by various companies that ask all kinds of sensitive information. I'll give you an example of one that is out there. A lot of the information that does get collected from dating sites, it does end up in data brokers.
Mm-hmm.
Data brokers, let's talk about some terms and who in what these guys collect. Have you ever heard of spyware?
Absolutely. Sure. And that leads me to want. There's so many places we can go with this interview.
Mm-hmm.
It leads me to asking about snooping on your partner, because one of the primary uses of spyware, I understand these days, is snooping on your partner. So,
well, there's two different types of spyware. There's spyware that you could plant on your partners' machines and devices,
mm-hmm,
and track their movements. Then there are open things that aren't really spyware, like the Apple Locate thing that you can just go on Apple. If you get control of their Apple account, you can track the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
Yahoo and Google Maps
the same thing.
Will track the device as well. But there's another type of spyware that we all get infected with, and that data goes over to a data broker. Mm-hmm. These are companies, the same big companies that send us junk mail, spam, and sell our phone numbers into the the telemarketing things. These companies are the same companies, and there's not a whole bunch of them.
Are those cookies?
Well, cookies are trackers that when you visit a website, a cookie is a control mechanism used by the site to track for the web server that you're on. So it knows what page you were on last.
Uh-huh.
It keeps your bank uses it for its encryption method. A cookie is an inert thing that's on your computer that's just a controller. Cookies aren't inherently dangerous, but there is another thing that's out there that's called the web bug, and that is a tracker that's silent that does track where you go. And web bugs can be found all over the internet. If you use Google Chrome and put Ghostery or Disconnect or Privacy Badger on your browser, you can block a lot of those web bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Privacy Badger?
Yeah, that's put out by the EFF, the Electronic Frontier. And they're a privacy advocacy group based in Washington, D.C., I believe.
Hmm. Oh, back to snooping on your partner.
Right.
What do you think of that? Is that something that...
You help people do?
Yeah, did you help people do that as a PI?
Well, let's just say that I've got somebody new that I've met.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I have somebody new, and they ask me, did you look at me? And because I have a different ability than most people out there, you know, I showed other private investigators how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really good at looking at people and finding tidbits of information.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like...
Well, what was your answer?
The answer is no, I didn't look because I want to discover for myself, because data in itself can create a false opinion.
Right, mm-hmm. An illusion.
And that illusion, you got to remember, is what makes up your credit report.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back to the dating thing, there are companies like that offer dating pieces of information so that we can look them up. But what's important to understand about the data brokers, the guys that sell that data, where they're getting their stuff and where they make their opinions is based on a wide variety of things. Let's talk about one of the dating sites. One of the internet dating sites that's out there collects will ask all kinds of questions, including sexual preferences down to great detail
mm-hmm.
about us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fill that stuff out,
it never goes away.
These questions. All of these questions are actually sold.
Yeah.
And the company itself started out.
Well, do you mind saying what company? Because people want to know. If they're visiting whoever, I'm not saying it's Match.com, but if it...
OkCupid used to be part of another company.
Mm-hmm.
That caused me to write a novel. OkCupid is a dating site. And what it had developed, it came over from the UK, had a whole bunch of scam dating sites that were associated with it, about 25 or 30 of them.
Now, when you say associated, meaning they owned OkCupid owned these sites, or people were kind of acting like they were OkCupid?
No, it was actually Cupid. The company had, I know that one of them, Ben Naughty, was one, because Ben Naughty came up as, when I was doing research on dating scams, I was going to write that in a book, which never developed. But what I did is I went out to Google and I looked for dating scam website. And
what's a dating scam?
Yeah. And what I did is I found the biggest offender, according to Google searches, of people complaining about dating scam websites. And I clicked on the website and I whipped out my credit card and I signed up.
Okay. But what made it a scam?
Well, it was a scam in a number of ways. One, when you log into the system, you know how you can have a chat with somebody?
Sure.
Well, they had a chat. You got to remember that all of these happened at the same time, but they had a chat that was a computer that you couldn't tell that the person at the other end
wasn't a person.
Was not a person.
Mm. Ah, so you're falling in love with a guy who's not actually going to show up at the Starbucks.
It's not
after
that you're going to fall in love with a person at that level,
right?
But when you're just having a communication, the communication would amazingly spring up about 5 days before your credit card expired, about 5 days after you paid them, and then they would go away.
Oh.
Just to make sure that you're interested. At the same time, people that were in Nigeria and Pakistan would open up chats with you and try to represent themselves as somebody that...
the Prince of Zamunda.
Yeah, or an available female. You got to remember that a couple years ago, Yahoo, who used to have an open chat, and all these guys used, closed their chat doors.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to go somewhere, and apparently they went to these systems.
Mm.
The other thing that would pop up, too, is what I call the cam girls, and I'm sure that there's cam guys, but these are the people that sell themselves doing live video acts on the with their cam in their bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And some of those sites are free and some of them they pay for.
Nancy, how much do you make doing that?
You know, in the dating stuff and getting, getting data from companies like been verified.
Huh. So Tripp.
Sure.
You, and probably after having so much, with so much experience in this arena, you meet someone new, like you said, you say you have not searched her. And I'm saying to myself, oh my God.
He didn't say it was a her.
Well,
I don't think
he didn't, but I'm saying it's a her, right? So I would have the shakes right now if I had those kinds of capabilities. And
you do.
I didn't. I have the shakes right now thinking.
No, I mean, you can search people.
Well, yeah, but I mean, if I was Tripp, what?
I mean, well.
Oh, my goodness. I could tell her what kind of underwear she had on last night. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I can't tell what underwear somebody is wearing.
But what I'm saying
is. I can tell you where you last bought gas. And
right.
Because the police have cameras on their car and they take pictures of the cars. You've seen the video cameras at the intersections?
Yes.
TransUnion sells all of that data. So if I think you're cute and I grab your license plate for $30, I can get pictures of your car every time a police officer went by it or went through an intersection.
Wow.
Yeah.
With the time and date.
And who you were with. if they were in the car.
Yeah, if somebody is near the car when the picture gets taken, or if it's to the right angle and it can see it through the windshield, yeah, I can look inside. You can get a picture inside the car.
So you can tell me where I bought gas and where I tend to travel.
Where you bought gas, does that mean if you used a credit card or no matter what, even if you use cash?
No, if you use cash, that negates most of the system.
Right.
And, you know, the whole thing about the banking industry is this. The American public has been bullied into giving the banks total control of all of our money for a real false idea of security.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that we get paid from our employer, and we keep all of our money electronic so some thief can't steal it from our wallet. But we live such insular lives where we don't run into anybody. We go to work. We come home. Why should we continue to let the bank keep our money and not pay us any interest on it? Instead, take the money out and keep it in cash. They're not providing any service to us.
Because we lose cash. I lost cash. I left my wallet in a ladies' room in Whole Foods, of all places, just believing that because it was Whole Foods, surely I would get it back. I forgot it.
Oh, you forgot it.
Because it was Whole Foods by any stretch of the imagination. But I went in. I forgot it. I left out. When I realized I had forgotten it, I ran back to get it. It had not been turned in. And I'm a person who typically never carries cash. I had $450 in my wallet. Mm. I had at least two of my credit cards. And I came back that night. I came back the next day. No wallet, no credit cards, no license, no cash. So I'm saying, that's it. I'm never shopping there again. However,
how are you going to blame it on Whole Foods?
I'm not blaming it on Whole Foods, Frank. That's a whole separate conversation and show.
I'm glad I followed you into that bathroom.
Can I get the money back now? So Trip, so it's, you know, so that whole idea of carry cash, I get that. I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, cash is still king. It's a way to kind of stay off the grid a little bit. However, a person like me who in that particular instance was careless, left their wallet, I wish I hadn't have brought the cash.
What do you say, Trip?
Well, no, I understand. And right now, as everybody should know, the credit cards that we're using have a magnetic strip on the back.
Yeah.
And that magnetic strip in the credit system was really tying merchants up for a very long time. In other words, charging extreme amounts of money to accept credit cards.
Right.
And they got competition by a company called Square.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This is a little device that you stick on your phone.
Right.
Well, what wasn't talked about,
the little white thing that goes, that you stick into the jack. Yes.
Yeah, you stick it into your iPhone or you stick it into your Android, and you can take a credit card. Well, mm-hmm.
PayPal does that too.
Yes, PayPal has that device too. Mm-hmm. The difference between PayPal and Square, though, is Square was giving them away literally to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, one of the manufacturers, and I can't remember who it was, it makes those little boxes that goes in the gas station that you use for credit card transactions,
mm-hmm.
put a YouTube video up stating that Square wasn't safe, anybody could steal your credit card numbers with it, and they made the how-to video of how to make a iPhone into a credit card skimmer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today, there are devices all over the place that steal our credit cards from gas pumps, from ATMs, any place that you slide a credit card into, they'll steal the numbers off the back of the credit card.
via the magnetic strip.
Right, that magnetic strip. In Europe, this problem was going on as well, and they switched over to using the chip.
Chips. I was going to say, is that why we have chip technology now?
Mm-hmm.
Right, but the problem in Europe doesn't have the same banking rules that the U.S. has.
What's the difference?
In Europe, if you go into Whole Foods and you connect and you pay with your card, and that system is on Wi-Fi, and some hacker steals your number off of the Wi-Fi, what they do is they'll take your card information, stick it on another card, and empty your bank account at your bank.
And that's legal in Europe? I mean, you
no,
said it's
not
different.
Not legal, but the difference is that you're out the money.
Oh, that's different.
Oh, here you wouldn't be.
You don't get the money
here
back.
Here we have an FDIC, and we have that the banks use as their personal piggy bank. You see, identity theft, and this is a lot of the misinformation that's out there. When a credit card number gets stolen, one, that's not ID theft, that's credit card theft.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
LifeLock tries to lie about it and scare the general public into using a useless service that nobody needs.
Fear is big in America. That's huge. You can make a lot of money scaring people.
If you want to know the basics of how do you protect your identity, I have a free paper on my website, TripHelix.com. Just go to my website right on the front page. It says put your name and email address in. I'm not collecting and selling your data.
Mm-hmm.
And you can download a copy of my privacy recommendations of how to freeze your bank accounts and keep yourself safe on that side of the fence.
Mm-hmm. Meaning the European side of the fence or just the credit card side of the fence?
I'm talking about all your credit information.
All of it, period.
All
right. Okay.
All of it.
Okay.
In the United States, though, getting back to the credit information and stealing the chip and us going through a $20 billion changeover, that's how much it's going to cost American business to change to the chip.
Mm-hmm. Why does it cost the business that?
Because that little ma and pa that you go into to buy your gas and to buy your candy bar on the way home, they own their own equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And there are hundreds of thousands of those little companies scattered throughout the United States.
They've got to get new equipment.
And they got to buy new equipment, and the equipment is sold to them. And these guys don't understand this, but the equipment that's sitting on their counter that they spend $500, $800, $1,200 for sells on eBay for about $50.
Wow. And that does that mean they can buy it for $50, or
yeah,
it's too technical where they wouldn't even know what to do with it if they got it?
Yeah, a lot of them don't know what to do with it if they bought it themselves. And the other side of it is the banking industry lies. So if I'm using a merchant and I want to put a new piece of equipment in, I've heard them say, "Oh, you've got to buy it from us. You can't buy it from any third party."
Like it's not going to work.
Well, it will work.
Sure.
It just needs to be reprogrammed.
Okay.
They just lie because they want to sell you one that cost them $50 and they want to sell it to you for $1,200.
Got it. Okay, so Trip, you got to give us some juice, man. So I meet a guy and I'm thinking, well, he's cute. He sounds good. Maybe I want to go out with him. What's a girl to do? How much information should I dig up on him?
First of all, the information that is out, there are two sides to this.
Okay.
One is you have hairs on the back of your neck that stand up when you're worried about something.
Definitely.
And you know what?
That's the best detection.
I've learned over time by making the wrong choice over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
When I get those little hairs that stand up on the back of my neck, and I'm talking to somebody new, and she's really pretty, and I get that little hair sticking up, and I can feel it, and when I walk away, I might take their number, I'll walk away, and I go, throw that one away.
Mm.
Because you know more than any other computer, when any computer is going to know.
Wow.
Trust your instincts.
The second thing is the sexual registry that your state might maintain of the people that have committed sex crimes is available and should be available by the state. The problem that the data brokers have, and this is something that all of us should be aware of, is that the data brokers grab that information too. So if you are 25 years old and you're applying for a job and you're getting turned down all over the place, it may not have anything to do with you. It may be that those companies are using data brokers to do a background check of you, and you're confused with somebody with six DUIs.
Wow.
This happens all the time.
Okay.
And unfortunately, right now, there's no way to fix that except tell the data brokers, I don't want my information on your system. And you can do that, too, by going to itsmyinfo.org. It's one of my websites. And click on that big orange button in the middle of the screen and tell Axiom and Experian, I don't want to play. I don't want you selling my information.
We're talking with author, blogger, and privacy expert Trip Elix. Trip, please tell our listeners what you're up to and how we can find you.
You can find me by typing in TRIPELIX into Google, because I'm all over the internet. I like the internet, and I was on it on the second day. You know, Facebook is the idea of the internet, a system, not them spying on us, but setting a system so that we can all get together and meet new people and make old acquaintances and share information.
And irritate each other and send each other junk.
Stupid puppy and cat videos.
Right.
Ooh. Oh, wait. Maybe I better wait. Keep going.
What you waiting on?
I was just thinking, Trip, talk to us about, there's a couple of things. So one is that in preparing to talk with Trip, I found out that there's this situation going on where now companies are going to be using your Facebook posts or your social media posts as a way of almost like as a sort of a credit reporting tool.
Well, actually, Experian is using social networks to part in your score, and so do other companies.
How does that work?
When we post stuff on the internet, and this is a threat to free speech. This is a huge threat to dissent. And what I mean by dissent is this. If you are against the popular decision of the country, we went through a time in our country of protests, the civil rights movement.
Are you talking about McCarthyism?
These areas of dissent and the dissenters are now being tracked by data brokers. Mm-hmm. And because they're voicing their opinion, they're being penalized because they're not the, quote, cookie-cutter norm.
And so how does that penalization work in terms of credit? They decrease your credit score?
your credit score is affected, and yes, you will get a decrease if you drink. That's been known for many years in the industry.
That means if you go to a bar and buy something from a liquor store?
Unfortunately, people in our society have
with your
a
credit
very
card.
Short memory span, but since 1968, if you were black or female, you couldn't get credit. Mm. Only after 1972, and that really didn't fix things either, the systems were still barring people.
Mm-hmm.
And Experian, the same company that's spying on us on the social networks, has a long history of spying and abusing the American public. Most of the credit reporting acts that were passed by Congress, almost all of them were written with Experian in mind. They used to have a different name, and these companies are in my book, A Right to Property, which you can get from my website, Amazon, iTunes. You can walk into a Barnes & Noble and ask for it and order it.
So wait a minute. So now let me ask you this. Now, in your book, you actually talk about these pseudo-credit reports. And so
right. We're
talking about these, the big three, but the bottom line is now you have companies that are buying
like
these pseudo-reports.
Doing pseudo-reporting. And where this pseudo-reporting gets used is when you apply for not only credit, but you apply for insurance.
Right.
Your insurance price is based on your credit score and your social score. So people that don't use the internet have no online presence. From what I've gathered so far, you get a discount for using the internet, and if you've got a Facebook and Twitter account, your price is actually lower that you pay for standard auto insurance, because that's the only gauge, you know, when I walk up to somebody and I say, hi, how are you? My name's Trip. You're like, how much do you pay for insurance? How old are you? Do you have any kids? And you try to reverse the actuary tables. I can tell you that I do see a pattern that's different if somebody has a social presence or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And it doesn't matter what your social presence is or what you're saying politically. It just means if you have one.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing politically is that people that are politically involved, heavily politically involved, come into two classes. They either come into the really upper income levels or the no income levels and don't care about the credit system.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people that are in the middle don't seem to really focus on stuff. They're too busy on their regular lives. I mean, there are exceptions.
That ends up being a large...
There are exceptions to the rule, but at the same time, the credit reporting companies and the pseudo credits, one, they have no right to our names. Your name is your property.
Yeah.
And until you start standing up for yourself.
I'm not clear what a pseudo credit report is.
A pseudo credit report is, let's put it this way.
Put it that way.
A credit report, if I fill out an application for a new apartment, that company can go to the traditional credit reporting companies and pay for an agent or get a terminal themselves and pay $250 a month or setup fee for each one, $15 for each report inquiry, or they can go out to a data broker and pay $5.
Mm-hmm.
And when we use data broker's report versus the traditional credit reports, and you do that one for $5 or $10,
that's called a pseudo credit.
All right.
And there are companies that specialize in pseudo credit. One of the things that impacts our privacy that most people don't realize is that Justice Souter died, as you may know. But there was a case that was brought before the Supreme Court that was about a guy that couldn't get a job, and he found that Spokio was selling a pseudo report about him that was false. Mm-hmm. And he sued Spokio, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. It got heard by the Supreme Court, and then the justice died. So that's one of the things that's sitting out there pending. And that is a case about whether or not Spokio can offer credit reporting information but not be a credit reporting company.
And what about this other part of the case isn't about its accuracy?
Well, accuracy and the details were supporting arguments within the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And saying that the thing is, there's no accountability. Axiom, if you don't know who Axiom is, go out to YouTube, type in Trip Elix. You can see that I've got like 5 or 6 videos. I got one there that's called Who is Axiom? Axiom is the largest data broker in the world. They have information on all of us. They invented the term big data. You've heard the word demographics, right?
Of course.
Do you know where the word comes from?
No, sir.
Think Q-tip. You know what a Q-tip is, right? Well, demographics was a company started in 1968 by Charles Ward and his brother Stephen as a mailing list for the Democratic Party. Demographics changed its name a few times, and today it's known as Axiom.
Mm.
And back when demographics was a company, it sold what the definition of what you know as demographics means.
Mm.
Today, all of your social networks, everything that you've browsed on the internet and gone to major sites
uses demographics, creates demographics.
All this is the name of the company.
Uh-huh. And it's so, almost like saying Xerox now.
Right.
We Xerox something, but Xerox is actually the name of a company.
Right.
But we often use Xerox as though it's just synonymous with copying.
Right.
Interesting.
So, Trip. When you talk about using the internet, I spoke with a friend last night. I was telling him about talking with you today, and he mentioned the virtual private networks, the VPNs.
Yeah, the VPNs, and you got to be careful about the VPNs too. You know, it sounds like you got to be careful about everything.
You do.
I use a VPN from time to time.
Oh, you do? Okay.
But what is it?
But there's a limitation to being on secure browsing. You can't go on Facebook.
If you're on a secure browser.
If you want to be completely secure, you can't go on Twitter.
Right, because it's all based on being identified.
You know, these are the reasons I use the internet. You can't check your email.
Wow.
What's a VPN?
Oh. A VPN means a virtual private network. The thing that you got to understand about data brokers, they will do anything to steal your data.
Mm-hmm.
Half the websites that are out there on the internet on disease are run by data brokers. Relationships, they're run by data brokers.
Yeah, so essentially this thing filters your... So if you do a search, it filters it through another...
Actually, all of the traffic for your computer gets routed through goes through what's called a tunnel. Think of a giant straw.
Okay,
so all the information runs in the straw, and in theory, nobody can look at the inside of the straw because your information comes in one end and goes out the other. Mm-hmm. But when you use VPNs, some of these VPNs, like the one that I've got on my phone, I put on my phone for a little while because I wanted to keep trackers from Facebook annoys me on my cell phone. I'm sorry.
Me too. I don't have it on my cell phone.
Turn off your notifications.
It could be that I have a Samsung Galaxy 2.
I'm gonna leave that alone.
That, but
even Trip went silent. Galaxy you got a 2. Lord have mercy.
What are they at? 8 now? Oh, or 7 or something like that? I mean, my phone still.
Do you have a GPS?
Yes.
Do you have Facebook Messenger?
No.
Okay. Well, if you put any of the, there are third-party apps that you can put on your device besides Facebook. I use Facebook, so I talk about it a lot. But there are third parties that are out there, and this is the thing about all the apps, is that our government has been doing a horrible job with technology. And Mr. Google and Mr. Apple, who are the predominant players in the marketplace, sell advertising space, sell apps, to thieves. For about 6 months, Microsoft sold ad space to thieves. So if you wanted Firefox, if you typed it in Bing, I want Firefox download, the top link on their website
wasn't Firefox.
Was not Firefox. Mm-hmm. You click on it, and if you've got a really, if you have a decent virus alert, it would go off. I know this because I did that.
What are your thoughts on our ease with clicking in the box of terms of agreements when we're downloading an app or where we're signing up on a website? We don't even read them.
Right.
What are the dangers there? What are your thoughts about those?
Well, my thought is two-sided. One, agreements are supposed to have a beginning and an end. But when we click agree on one of these things that we don't read, and we agree to the terms, and we download the program, and we use the program and decide the program is garbage, where do we return it? Mm-hmm. The problem is that we don't have an ability to turn that agreement back off. Mm. And if that agreement says, Frank, you gave me the right to copy your contacts forever. Mm. It doesn't matter that you got a new phone, Frank. You gave me the permission to copy your contacts and send emails on your behalf to all of your contacts, advising them of your birthday.
Interesting point.
Okay, the data brokers know this, and that's one of the mechanisms that they use to steal. You see, they use two mechanisms. One, your information is public information. It's not. Two, you gave us permission.
Okay,
so,
but
if you tell Experian that or Axiom that you don't want your information sold anymore, and there's another one that you should get into your head, and that's LexisNexis.
Mm-hmm.
There are
a lot of lawyers use that, right?
Company that steals your data constantly. If you tell these companies, no, I don't want you to have my information, and I rescind all agreements that you've made on my behalf, go out to itsmyinfo.org and click on the orange button. I give this information away for free.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thing, Frank. If you tell a data broker that you don't want them to sell your data anymore and they insist, I want to know who you are. Because there's a bunch of attorneys in this country that would love to sue the bejesus out of these guys. Okay, and I want to find other people that are like-minded like me, because I'm for a free and open internet.
And how would someone get in touch with you? Well, let me do my we're talking with author, blogger, and privacy expert Trip Elix. Please tell our listeners what you're up to and how they can find you, and then we roll right into what you were just saying.
Sure. My website is Trip Elix. TRIPELIX.com. You can find me on Twitter as Trip_Elix. Find me on Facebook at Facebook.com/TripElix. Connect with me on any of the social networks, and I would be more than happy to forward stuff over to you, Frank, and also let others know about your show.
Well, thank you.
As soon as we get offline, I'll tweet about it so that people know that I'm there. My other privacy website is itsmyinfo.org.
Okay.
And as far as my books, you can get those on iTunes, Amazon. You can get them at Barnes & Noble. I have them on my website as well, tripelix.com. The companies that are out there selling our information and getting the dating information, it's wrong. It's wrong because the information is not correct that they have. And it, for another time, that I'll tell you that our criminal lookup system is completely broken. And I talk about this in our book, and I really give solutions to this stuff. That's why I go to the security conferences, is I want to know not only what the hackers think, but how to fix it. You know, hackers are not the enemy. Hackers are the – think about this for a second. Who has exposed government and corporate wrongdoing in the last 2 years?
The hacktivists.
But one of the hard, I mean, government comes down ridiculously hard on these folks because they can't control them.
Can't control them, and they come down. Now, if you're talking about a hacker that gets into a system and manipulates a foreign computer to his advantage so he can spy on you, that's a hacker.
You're talking about that works for the government or
it
doesn't?
Every one of our computers, and they spy on us on mass scale. Where's the Justice Department?
I get you. Now, are you talking about hackers that work for the government or don't? Because the government has their own hackers.
They have their own hackers, but what I'm saying is that viruses and spyware that are manufactured by corporations to spy on the American public and know where we're at and stick them on our phones and stick them on our computers should be investigated and prosecuted with the fury of the federal government that goes after individuals doing the same actions against corporate America.
Well, on
that
note,
there's a double standard going on, and I'm tired of seeing it. And that is that the government is ignoring what companies are doing to our devices without our knowledge.
But people don't really care. I mean, if you really think about it, when we click on those terms of agreement, we don't read it because we don't really care. And we understand what the ramifications could be on the legal side or what we might be signing away, but we don't really care.
Oh, we just don't think our own lives are all that complicated. And I will say,
until you're right, your life isn't that complicated until an identity sticks his head into your life.
Right, Nancy.
And I agree with you, Frank. I really agree with you. There are people that do care. And honestly, I'm looking to find you.
Okay.
If you're somebody that is tired of corporations bullying you and telling you what you can and can't do, in your life.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know who you are, and I'll let you know who I am.
Understood.
Got it.
Nancy.
Okay.
Yes.
Guess what?
The revolution doesn't have the masses. That's fiction. It's individuals that want to make change.
Well, on the note of making change.
Our Justice Department really needs to start investigating the mass hacking of all of the computer systems and all of the systems that we use by corporate America, and do it with the fury that they go after individuals, because this is completely not fair. It's not fair that hackers get prosecuted for invading a computer, but some company can stick a Trojan on my device and use it, and there's no foul claim by the government.
Yeah.
That should be that is illegal activity.
Well, hold on. Give me a second. Give me a second, Trip, because you said something, and I want to go back to it. What were you saying? What were you going to tell me?
Oh, me?
Yes.
I can talk?
Please.
Yeah. You know who's back?
Who?
Miko.
Really?
She got a little financial advice to give us.
Oh, cool. Let's hear it.
What you got, Miko?
Here's a financial tip from Miko's Money Matters. Are you dating or looking for that special someone? Do you want to make sure that you are picking someone that is financially responsible? Here are some tips to help you discern whether you are dating a gold digger, G-O-A-L, or a gold digger, G-O-L-D. Believe me, gender doesn't matter. A man or a woman can be either. 1. A gold digger is mainly interested in what you can buy them. This person is interested in what material things you can add to their life. 2. A gold digger is interested in your dreams and aspirations. This person is attracted to your inherent talents, like intelligence, your sense of humor, and your compassion. 3. A gold digger is smitten with the car you drive, your home, or your status in society. 4. A gold digger understands your grind and respects delayed gratification. This individual sees the big picture, what you're trying to create and achieve. They do not want you to incur debt to try to impress or woo them. 5. Gold diggers believe the cost of the gift measures your feelings towards them and may manipulate you to spend beyond your budget or comfort zone. 6. Gold diggers push you to be honest and go after your dreams. They do not let the social mirror, relatives, or friends determine the life you both share and or want to create. So don't just get lost in the physical attraction you have for your potential partner. Make sure you also weigh how attractive their financial values are too. If you need more guidance or financial dating tips, call Miko's Money Matters at 202-695-2404. And remember, it's never too late to rescue your financial future.
Thanks, Miko.
Okay, Trip, you say that we should, you know, the government should do something. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about another point that you make in your book, which is that especially the Fourth Amendment laws, constitutional laws, Bill of Rights, these things are designed to protect us from the government. But you do cite that there's nothing to protect us from each other. And that would include protecting us from corporations. So the government may be sort of lax in this whole thing because their base is covered. Now, the whole, what is it, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware, or let the internet user beware, we're kind of on our own in that.
That's true. And we've only got one agency in the federal government that's really doing anything to, quote, try to protect us, but they're totally overwhelmed, and that's the Federal Trade Commission.
Okay.
The FTC.
And they're overwhelmed with what kind of cases? What's the big one?
Is their biggest issue privacy and internet issues or electronic issues?
They are the arm of the government that's supposed to be watching our back.
Got
but
it.
At the same time, with all the power of that massive federal agency, Mm-hmm. Companies do things that violate the logic and reason of information all the time. I'll give you an example. The example is that when you use your credit card and you go to a doctor and you pay the copay, or you go to a pharmacy and you pay for your medications and you pay the copay, and you have your loyalty card with you, Experian sells what ailments you have and what diseases you might have.
To who?
To anybody that wants to buy them.
So much for your medical
privacy. It's called
privacy.
Health banks.
Mm. Health banks?
Or behavior bank.
And what can be done with that information?
Anything. What can be done with it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, blackmail.
And they market pharmaceuticals to you, I guess?
They market pharmaceuticals to, they sell it to anyone. You gotta remember this. It's just for marketing means that you're just for sale.
Okay.
And regulation in this industry, asking government to impose new laws, is legitimization of your stolen data.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax are allowed to have your name.
Mm-hmm.
So regulation would be good news for them.
Through regulation says that they could have it.
Right.
Mm. And what I'm saying about your information, your right to your name, this doesn't come from me. If you ask any federal official, anybody that works for the federal government, they will repeat exactly what I'm saying. It's not that it's not known within society. If your name were public information, the police would not need a search warrant.
If your name were public information.
The police would not need a search warrant for Google. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You mean to find out information about you from Google?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Okay.
Hmm.
You got any recommended books?
Besides your own?
Yeah.
Well, the last one that I read about government, which was pretty good, was Tubin wrote The Nine, which is about the Supreme Court justices.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a big-time fan of Freakonomics.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Understanding what the cause and effect are is the basis of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You got any advice to couples?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, if you think your spouse might be cheating on you, they are.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Really, if you have a suspicion, it's right.
Mm.
And then what?
And then what?
Decide.
Confront them. Discuss it. If you can't have a discussion with your significant other, you've got some real problems.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really.
Wow.
If you can't have an open dialogue, then you've got a problem already.
Any advice to business owners?
Yeah, business owners, due diligence. And if you're really interested in your handling a lot of cash, hire a PI to do a background check of that new employee. Those data brokers, their stuff is crap. And, you know, they really don't know about anybody. The NCIC system is 55% incorrect. That's what our FBI uses for background checks for our guns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, you know, you hear about the gun check.
Mm-hmm.
That data is 55% incorrect, meaning that 45% of known criminals are not even in that system.
Mm.
Wow.
Okay, that's a huge amount. And the data brokers, their data is worse.
Give us a soundbite on data confusion.
Data confusion.
Well, yeah, the thing you mentioned to me where you...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
One of the most important things that you can do for yourself is disrupt your data.
That's it, yeah. Data
systems
disruption.
Systems and people look at your information and they look for who you are. Well, what the systems do is if you try to limit the amount of information you give the system, then everything I get from the system is correct because you've limited purposely the amount of exposure.
And how do you limit that?
Well, this is where the fallacy comes in. You don't limit it. You add to it.
Okay. You just
distort it.
Okay.
So when you're sitting bored at night with your tablet or laptop on your couch, watching a movie and you're surfing instead of talking to your significant other, look up stuff that you're not interested in and click on the advertiser link.
That is interesting. That's true.
Go on Facebook and look for things that you're not interested in, like windsurfing on cooler lids. And click like.
Right.
Okay,
Facebook sent me to the corner at one point because I like too many things. They turned off my like button for 30 days. I think it was Farsi, you know, Arabic language.
Yeah.
I was clicking like on... And they didn't like that because their whole thing is they want to track who I am and... I gave them too much information.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So
couldn't pin you down.
Just like the noise that we're all getting consumed with, that we're trying to hear through, that's what we need to do to our own data to mess with the data brokers, to make it impossible to track you if your GPS of your coordinates on your phone... I use a thing called GPS spoofer, and I'll tell your listeners something that they can, a little secret, and someday data brokers will figure this out. There's an expensive steakhouse in my area, and every time I go to a political event somewhere around the area, I will put my GPS as sitting in that restaurant.
How you will put your GPS as sitting in that restaurant? How do
I have a location spoofer on my phone, and it broadcasts the wrong address.
And what's the name of that again?
It's called GPS spoofer.
Okay.
On the Android system, the other one to get that's actually pretty good. It's made by a Russian group. It's called Lost Firewall.
Limits
the ability of those apps on your phone from actually talking to the internet and also tells you the countries where that information goes.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when we're talking about spying and data brokers, that's one side of the fence, but other governments throughout the world are trying to know the American people just like the American corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that they're doing that has to do with exploiting American business. Mm. And our government is doing just a horrible job. By the way, that's called fake GPS.
Fake GPS, okay.
On Android.
Okay.
How does that affect how your GPS...
Lost Net Firewall is the firewall that I use on my cell phone.
Lost Net. Okay.
And how does the GPS, fake GPS, actually affect your GPS when you really need it?
Oh, I turn it off.
Okay, all right.
That could be problematic.
What is it going to do me to be in Buenos Aires Airport? I hang out there a lot, too.
Okay. On that note, we've been talking with author, blogger, and privacy expert Trip Elix. Trip, last time, please tell our listeners how they can find you and what you're up to.
Sure. My Website is Trip, Elix, T-R-I-P-E-L-I-X, .com. And you can find me on the internet just about anywhere. Just type in T-R-I-P-E-L-I-X into Google. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. And that website, if you're sick and tired of all these companies doing all this stuff and you're done with it, it's myinfo.org. Click on the big orange button, and it gives you the addresses, free downloads of and free letters to mail all these companies, and tell them to cut it out and listen. You're not alone. I want to know who you are, because when I find enough of you, let's sue these companies and make them stop doing this to us. I'm done with being bullied. Are you?
Got it.
Along today's journey, we've discussed pseudo-credit, terms of agreements, and data brokers. I hope you've learned as much as I've had talking with Trip Elix about privacy in an information age. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr., that's M-R, Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us, and if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.